Welcome to One Nation Radio, hosted by Richard Ladd and James Boyd. If you would like to become a part of the nation, email us at radio1nation@gmail.com. You can contact us using Twitter at One Nation Radio, at DangerRich32, or at JamesBoydONR. We are also on iTunes as well. You can go to onenationradio.podomatic.com and subscribe to the show with the iTunes button on the right-hand side. And after all that, go visit foreverwrestling.tumblr.com for instant streaming, much more. Now that you've heard how to reach us, let's get to the show.
One Nation Radio!
Welcome back to One Nation Radio. This is our 19th episode. This is your host, Rich. James, what's going on?
Not much, man. Just sad season to go.
Yeah. We've got golf and NASCAR and
baseball
to look forward to. I think it's time to get back into wrestling pretty heavy.
Yeah, gotta catch up on that.
But
we still do wrestling podcasts, people. Don't worry.
We're just trying to get James all caught up. I've been keeping up with it. Been on Twitter and, you know, interacting with all y'all. Shout out to all the Twitter followers. We're actually, you know, gaining some followers. So,
it's amazing what putting up memes though.
Telling you. NBA season just came to a close. What was that, Thursday night?
Yeah,
I was sad to see it go. I'm always, like, the finals is always bittersweet for me because it's like, oh, man. Now we got to go through 4 months without basketball, like, or more than that even.
And another thing that also kills you is the fact of, at that point in time, you also have all the, like, seasonal TV shows out, too. So it's, like, it's definitely just like, the dead zone.
Yeah.
All you have are pretty much baseball to depend on during the summer.
And that depends. With baseball's popularity right now, it's not really, you know, nothing out there about baseball right now screaming, watch me.
Especially the fact that these pitchers dominating and these batters are getting killed.
Yeah. But we just had a hell of an NBA Finals. A rather lackluster postseason, in my opinion, aside from a couple series.
Did you want them all to be game sevens?
You know, 4 out of 10, you know.
Okay.
You know, some teams just got to get drugged, you know, I understand that, but it was pretty, you know. But NBA Finals, the Heat ended up taking home the title. Spurs ended up blowing the title in Game 6. So, just give me your thoughts on the first five games and what you saw through the first five games, James.
The first five games, you pretty much saw everybody have their moment. Whether it be the first or the second round. The second quarter of the first game when Duncan puts the Spurs on their back. Tony Parker comes through with the crazy clutch shot, which I swore if it went out, the Heat would have came down and won, or went to overtime at least. Game two, you had the 33-5 run based off of LeBron just wiping the floor with guys and shooters. You have game three where Gary Neal and
Danny Green go all time.
Yeah, they just go nuts. Danny Green on the way to setting the finals record in five games, the most three-pointers made, and didn't show up.
And through five games,
yeah,
he was the finals MVP.
Yeah, Dan Lovatar said it best. He thought it was a five. Danny Green must have thought it was a five-game series.
Yeah.
Game four, you have Dwayne Wade in a gots-to-have situation.
Hopping out of the coffin.
Along with LeBron, they both come out there and give you the 1-2 punch game. Along with Bosh also playing probably with the defense he played on Duncan also.
And at the rim.
One of his best two-way performances I've ever seen him play.
Right.
Then you get to game five and, you know, you had San Antonio pull away and the Heat made a bit of a run, but they ran out of gas at the end and also in San Antonio, so it sets up the 3-2 lead going back to Miami and everybody's thinking, you know, Shane's 2011 again.
Yep.
And you know, radio and ESPN, and you hear, you know, what's going on with Roman's team. Should Dwayne play less? Should he play more? Should he be on the floor? Should he take as many shots while he's on the floor? Should LeBron attack more? Should he shoot from the perimeter? You know, all kind of stuff. Should Chris Bosh get more involved?
Right.
you know, all the
things. All legitimate, you know, all legitimate things based on, you know,
what you've seen so far in the series,
What I was thinking through the first, like, game, a couple of games, like, I felt like the Spurs, like, they were just going to out-execute them, like, in game one. I just felt like they out-executed them, and, you know, they had that crazy shot. It didn't hurt, you know, that it went in, but at that point, it put them up four.
There was
so.
A 4-minute stretch in the fourth quarter where the Heat didn't score a single point, and their offenses went off the rails, and that's when enabled them to come back.
Right. Duncan, basically, you know, showing his greatness. It was it was a long time Tim Duncan fan that I enjoyed a lot, watching how he basically said, fuck this, I'm about to show up and ball. He was giving Birdman and Bosch all kinds of work, throughout game one. Game two, I was in absolute shock when he just blew the game open like that. And I, you know, Pop has that quick leash. He's like, oh, really? It's out of hand? Come sit down. Like, we don't need to run y'all out there and destroy your confidence even further. You guys are going to watch this and remember this. Game three, Gary Neal and Danny Green put on a show. LeBron gets this whole passive thing going. And through the first three games, I don't know what was wrong with him. But it looked a hell of a lot different from games 4-7 than 1-3.
To me, as far as a scoring standpoint, LeBron had two in game one, the fourth quarter, and a chunk of the third. He really only played about 3-4 good quarters offensively as far as scoring in the first three games, by his standard in the playoffs. So that was a little weird, you know. He had a triple-double. He had 18-18, and it was 18-18-10 or 18-18-11 triple-double in the first game, but a lot of it came down to it seemed to me like he was tired from the last series and a lot of stuff dealing with trying to go through all the screens with Tony Parker and trying to get accustomed to that.
Right.
He was gassed. But at the same time, you know, it's on him. We win, we give him praise. He loses, he has to take the bullet for it, you know, regardless of whatever happens. Because ultimately, as he said,
different from every other great player. Yeah. Game four, I touted kind of as the disrespect game. Like, Popovich, I think to a point, got pretty arrogant. And
with Wade and D.L.?
Well, he got pretty arrogant, thinking he could throw Thiago Splitter on Wade. And Wade was like, oh, really? And then that set off something inside him. And I don't think Wade's exactly a player you want to piss off.
No.
And then he was feeling it, and that he had that one of the signature moments in the finals where he did his that wrap around with the right hand and then dunk on the fast break, and it was shocking to see, just like looking at Wade and me always being a huge Dwayne Wade detractor and ready to write him off at any, you know, anytime there's slippage or cracks, and he gives you a good reason to. It's not just, you know, this bull. Like, he'll come out there and give you 5 points in a game. You know, he'll come give you 10 points back-to-back in a game in a series, but he found a way to turn it on in game four, and it was refreshing to see LeBron not have to do it by himself, which is what he, you know, he tried to get away from Cleveland for, and, you know, he ended up almost basically doing that anyway.
It's
so
funny at times.
It was ironic, I thought.
As much of a LeBron fan as I've been, you know, throughout his career, and me always feeling like he never had enough help. Watching Dwayne Wade in these last three postseasons where injuries, whatever, his attitude or his game being on or off, just him not having it some of these times, and if they lose, it makes me so frustrated. It's like, you know, Dwayne Wade, I understand he won early, but he's always had this pass to just get him through, and it's like, enough was enough. If LeBron James actually had played the way Dwayne Wade has played, and it was reversed, we'd be killing LeBron forever, in eternity. It's just a double standard, I understand, but, I mean, when he comes through, it's like, we always go back to, it's just like,
oh now you want to try hard.
Yeah, to me, it's a weird thing, like at what point, like, why don't you turn over on that side of the bed every time you can?
Yeah.
Or is it thinking where he's picking his spots, or, we'll never know, but it's something to think about.
All right, and then, you know, game five happens, and I feel like the Spurs just, you know, they just win a game, and they basically shut Miami down in the second half. Like, you know, that was a microcosm of the first four games.
Finally got a Ginobili game.
Yeah, and the last, you know, modern Ginobili game before they made that deposit into his bank account. They, meaning the Miami Heat, you know?
you sound bitter, Rich. You sound bitter.
You know, I've been trying to hold my tongue, you know, as far as with the, you know.
You should hear him on, like, we had these phone conversations and, like, as far as prep, and sometimes we'll get have these talks that are pretty much just like these shows, except obviously a little bit more humorous, and because it's more of a visceral reaction, and a lot of times it's more like a rehashing of something we've already talked about, but Rich was, after game six, he was distraught. He couldn't believe it. Like, most of the world couldn't believe that happened.
I was in absolute disbelief.
He came to the series saying that the Spurs are going to win in six because based off the format, Rich believes that if you're the middle, that it's built for the middle three team to win, that has this on the road starting out, because all you got to do is get a split and make sure it doesn't go to game seven.
Which is like pretty damn near happened. Like,
I'm a believer in, if it's close, the only way that the road team wins has middle three is they have to get a split in the first two, otherwise they're cooked.
Yep. So like the whole series was playing out exactly as I, you know, kind of figured it for the road team, and till the last 30 seconds of the game, like,
game six,
but I'm going to talk about game six, like, as a whole. Like, we got to see Duncan come out there and absolutely black out in the first half.
He was like 25-10.
25-10 in the first half. He ended up a little gassed and a little bit forgotten about in the second half. I was rooting so hard for the Spurs to win. I'm just going to say it. You know, I am a Miami Heat hater. It's time to turn heel. It's time to turn heel. I'm turning heel on air.
I'm so proud of you for admitting it.
You know, ain't no use in hiding it, you know. if you guys want to go back and check my personal Twitter at Dangerous32, you would have been pretty entertained throughout these finals. But watching the second half, they're up by 10, they're up by 12, and then, you know, Popovich is like, okay, we can get Duncan a blow. Oh, we'll take him out of the game. Woo, man, how are we gonna win this? All of a sudden, anything with Thiago Splitter that could go bad in those last two and a half games did. Any lineup with Thiago Splitter on the floor was awful.
It wasn't even just, it was throughout the whole series. Like, he only had like maybe two or three.
And
stretches.
We didn't talk about the block either.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I was getting to. Like, only like two or three stretches he had on the floor where he didn't look like, where he wasn't getting cannibalized by their defense. It just, he got to the point to where when he would come up and set a high ball screen and roll or slip the screen, he would catch the ball and not even look to put the ball down or figure out where he was. He just caught it and put the ball up in the air because he got it stripped from him so many times by bringing it down that he didn't know what to do. It was almost like
maybe the stage was too big for him.
And then you have, you know, the game two, you know, the lot, I don't know, hand of God block from LeBron.
Like, Thiago Splitter, like, almost like, if I was a Spurs fan, like, Thiago Splitter would have to show me one if I ever saw. Like, hey, you Thiago Splitter, hold this.
And you know, and at the same time, I felt like everybody else in that he had to leave. He couldn't play anymore. They had to put in Diaw. And Diaw did a surprisingly good job of guarding LeBron when he was in. With the defense obviously packed behind him. But at the same time, you can't have Diaw out here running as your center while Duncan, whatever the time, the few minutes that Duncan sits, where it's 8 minutes where he's going
to
sit.
Like, LeBron immediately goes to the rim. They hit a three.
That's exactly what he did. That's exactly what he did at the beginning of the fourth quarter of games 6 and 7.
And with that being said, they still were going to lose at that point. Like, fast forward to the last 30 seconds. Kawhi Leonard, who had an epic series.
I'm sorry. No, no. 28.2 seconds.
Okay. 28. Yeah. Excuse me. Excuse me for messing up.
And that lets you know how even more. All of you were 28.2 seconds. Up five.
Oh my God! If you remember, what are the Tim Duncan
the
thing?
The ropes.
Jesus.
The ropes around.
The rope game. How about we call it that? The rope game.
You should have heard Mickey Arison on Dan Le Batard's show talking about
how mad they got when they saw those ropes.
Not mad, but how he'll always remember the fact that those ropes being there and how everybody saw those gold ropes. Saw those yellow ropes and thought about immediately. Everybody on the team thought about 2011, how bad it felt for the Mavs to win Game 6 on their home court, and they didn't want that to happen again.
Yeah.
And then
Kawhi Leonard misses a free throw. Who held it down for Brothers with Braids, James? You know,
yeah.
The whole series. He misses one or two free. Or excuse me, no, it was Ginobili first, who goes to the line and shoots a rather, you know. No one's kind of paying attention because everyone's assuming it's over. And then he goes one of two, and there, you know, he leaves the door just cracked. They come down. LeBron misses the shot first. They get it back to him. Then he makes a three.
Correct.
They foul Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard goes to the line for the biggest free throws of his career.
All right, pauses right here. Now at this point, Bomani brought this up, and it's a great point. At that point, you look at the pressure and the fact of you go into it and you think about the Spurs, and this has also been a misnomer for the past 2 years. Everybody's, you know, you look at the Spurs and you see the calling card, you see Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, and you think this is an old veteran team. To the most part, with your stars being through that many battles, that many wars, and have persevered and won three of them.
Mm-hmm.
You understand, yes, they have experience. But behind those three guys are Danny Green's, is Gary Neal's, is Kawhi Leonard's, is Tiago Splitter's. These guys are relatively young.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Especially Leonard, is his second year in the league. He's 21 or 22, right?
21.
He's 21. At that point in time, and I hate looking at body language, you know, but at the same time, looking at him, one will believe that you see that all of that I just mentioned going across his face of, oh my God, I have to make these two free throws. I'm shooting these free throws not for me. I'm shooting these free throws for Duncan.
Yeah.
And he clinks the first one, and then he makes the second one. And then you still think, okay, they're down five.
Well, they're down three at that point.
Or they're down three.
Yeah.
You're still thinking, okay, well, all right.
Just stay in front of the shooters.
The odds of them coming down here and making it three, you know, is just, the odds of them is very low.
God awful.
At that point, after the Ginobili shot, they literally had a 98.6 chance of winning. Now, flash forward back after they go into the timeout. Popovich shakes out Duncan. People are, you know, debate whether or not they think that's a good idea because Bosch so happens to get the rebound after the fact off the two threes. Now, my thing is this. The same thing comes down with the Hibbert thing that happened in game one. Lil Bryant, the game winner. You say you want to keep Hibbert in because he would have contested the shot or whatever you want to say, or you want to say you keep dunking him so he can grab a board. I understand what you're saying, but it's also playing the result. Because the process is thinking that out is they have five shooters spacing the floor. Duncan has to get out from the paint to guard one of those guys off a switch. Do you want to trust that he's going to grab a rebound, or you want to trust that, or what's more likely to happen, that whoever he's supposed to guard is going to get open and get by him or get a shot or what have you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really blame Popovich for taking him out in that situation.
Yeah. And then they get the desired result because they miss the first shot.
Like both LeBron, times.
Yeah,
LeBron missed the first three after the Ginobili free throws, and so I've been getting the rebound, get it back, makes the shot, comes down, misses the three pointer. Bosch comes out, makes the three pointer. Then you have Ray Allen, who's in the paint next to Bosch. And it's a scramble, obviously.
He takes one dribble and a long step back, like
which is what happens all the time. Which happens all the time after offensive board. It's a scramble. Everybody's crashing boards, whatever, and then you never know what happens. Especially in the mix of the chaos of this is on the line for the title. Ray Allen sprints back. He gives it off to Bosch. He takes one dribble. He never looks down to see if his feet are actually behind the line. He just knows his feet are behind the line. It's almost like the Reggie Miller, the presence of mind to go back. 3-pointer from the right corner, splash, with 5 seconds left, and it's a tie ball game.
And at that point, like, the arena, like, the lid comes off the arena, the Spurs, like they're officially out the coffin. Like, the coffin game, the rope game, however you want to describe it, like, that game was a classic because it was over so many different times for both teams.
I called it, you know, we all the guys we see here in that group chat, we run the group chats, and I forgot at what point in the third quarter, just like in game five, when the Heat or the Spurs had made their gigantic run and they were up by double digits plus.
This is six, you're saying. Game six.
Six and five. Both times, I called it. Like, we were at Wing House on Sunday for game five. They were up like 15 somewhere in the third quarter. I was like, it's over. The amount of injury it's going to take for them to come back is going to wear out, and then the Spurs still are going to score X amount of points for them to still win the game because the run is going to come off of playing ridiculous defense. Forget the offense turning, just igniting on fire. It's going to take the defense to turn up to a different level. It's going to kill as much all the energy they have, and then they can't even be able to stop it at the end. I thought the same thing that happened in game six, and it did. Until it just went to hell.
Yeah. And also the headband.
You really did. You know, the headband.
Like, also known as the headband game. You know, you can put any nickname on this game.
The Mike Miller missing the shoe game, too?
Yeah, the Mike Miller missing the shoe game. You can put any type of nickname on this game that you want. The Manu Ginobili turnover game.
Which one? 6 or 7?
Manu Ginobili taking his eyes off the ball. Like,
if I believe correctly, he
Tony Parker 6 of 23 game, you know?
If I believe correctly.
Danny Green, Danny Starks, you know?
Manu had, 12 or 13 turnovers in the last two games. Then you throw in Parker going, as you said, 6 for 23 in game 6. He goes 3 for 12 in game 7.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. It's just like, I mean.
Game 7 now.
All right, move on to game 7 to where,
And Kawhi Leonard scores every overtime point for the Spurs, by the way, after missing that free throw.
All five. Yes, he did.
Devastating loss. I proclaim
worst loss I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Worst loss I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen a team that close to winning a title ever, and just not win it.
Yeah.
Ever.
And then like, I sent a meme out with the old Undertaker with the purple gloves out to all the guys. I was like, still more alive than the San Antonio Spurs. Like, I felt like they were dead in the water. I was gonna root my heart out for them, but. Even then, like, they come out there, like, it's a tribute to them as professionals, them not believing, you know, the hype, them coming out there and still having a chance to win, even though they kind of looked like a defeated team throughout Game 7. What do you make of the decision, you know, it's easy to sit here and say, oh, they should have guarded him, you know, so he can't spray all those threes, but what do you say to the decision to sag off LeBron for that amount of time, and then Shane Battier catching the Holy Ghost also. And,
look,
you know,
it took LeBron, it took him up until the last four quarters of the seven game series for him to start shooting like this.
Mm-hmm.
It worked until it didn't. Like, If your thing is we're going to pack the paint with all these shooters, sag off of LeBron, sag off of Wade, kill them to the point to where their best two players have a negative plus minus of both of them on the floor throughout the series, you're taking that.
Mm-hmm.
You short circuited them. You got three good games out of Wade in the series. You had LeBron play awful in game 3. You had him not play well for most of game 2. You take that.
Mm-hmm.
You take it.
Manu Ginobili had.
You had the title. You take it. You didn't even get to a game 7 or like any. That was almost like the Madden game. Like you play a sports video game and the game just executively decides you're not winning. It cheats. That's what happened.
How many times did that happen to you, James?
You know, it happens.
It's happened to me a lot as I gotten older. Like when I was younger, I would dominate the video game. All of a sudden, the video game started. It's like, oh really? Y'all just gonna dominate us? All right, you know. And it started getting smarter. But I digress.
He won the one game in that situation that you win out of 100, literally out of 100.
Yeah, maybe 1,000.
God bless him.
God bless him.
Brian, when somebody shoots a terrible shot and it goes in, God bless him. Go back up to court.
Yeah. Like, Game 7, Manu Ginobili turns the ball over.
In the worst times, he melted down.
Somewhere. Like, he's just, you know, he catches the ball, starts moving, the ball flies out into the third row. The foul, you know, in Game 6, the Bosch block.
The backcourt violation.
Yeah, the backcourt violation. The travel foul.
In Game 6 and Oklahoma.
Yeah, and him just being, I was just questioning him being the primary decision maker. Was Parker that tired at that point?
To be honest, after he went on that run, that 5-0 run that we thought closed the game in Game 6.
Yeah.
Going back to that bench, he looked exhausted.
Tony Parker looked like Jordan on that play. Like that, like I sent out that text. Did you get that text?
I don't think I did.
I was like, man, like he got that steal. He hit the three.
The
he got the steal.
Absurd three.
He got a three to steal. Then that like got in the paint or whatever. I was like, Tony Parker looks like Michael Jordan out here. Like, yes, yeah,
yeah.
I was like, he looks like Jordan out here, like ready to steal this in Game 6 on the road. So, you know.
He looked exhausted. I mean, they took him out the first time because they were worried about the last two Heat possessions in the regulation.
Uh-huh.
They took him out because one adjustments that the Heat made were the Parker getting screened onto guard James instead of Kawhi Leonard via the Chalmers LeBron screens, and it worked pretty good. And, you know, Parker's never been a great defender. So they took him out in favor of putting more size in there. So he ended up getting switched on to, like, Ginobili. LeBron ended up getting switched to Ginobili on offense. So it worked one time. They go back up to court. The last time it happened, they're out of timeouts at that point in time. Or no, they pocketed one of the timeouts. And Ginobili has the turnover.
Mm-hmm.
This is overtime. And at that point, you play a percentage of, okay, Manu goes down. He gets something, what I was calling timeout, to set the Heat's defense. You rather just run, trust Manu, a guy that's, you know, you've won three titles with.
When one trusts what they know too much.
And then you got to keep in mind, just 2 days ago, he had a great game. Just 2 days ago.
What were the chances? Look, that was the first thing I said. Well, is he going to play like that next game? Because that's what I said about Wade.
Well, it wasn't even necessarily being a playing that way. It's just, you know, just don't suck. Just,
just don't suck.
Just don't suck.
Yeah, like Game 7, like LeBron comes out there and hits all a litany of shots, which I think is a tribute to his own hard work to become, you know, put himself in that position to be able to trust himself. Like you said, you know, he was one of the best shooters in the league this year. I think you could pretty much throw those stats out in the finals because it's a different ball game.
Correct.
But it's a tribute to his hard work, which is something that anybody should be able to appreciate, whether you're a detractor like myself.
Because he was a below-average shooter from mid-range and deep and from three for a good chunk of his career at the beginning.
Yeah.
And
that's something we've seen every pretty much legend do.
Get a jumper.
Get a jumper. You know, Karl Malone got a jumper.
Besides who? Go ahead.
Huh?
Besides who?
Dwayne Wade. I don't know if Dwayne Wade's any better than he was in 2006 right now. So, you know, yeah, like, you know, Dwayne Wade. But how did you feel as a LeBron fan to see him get to raise that the second title and second finals MVP?
To me, it doesn't I listen to Levitard a lot on the radio and local, his Miami station radio, so I get a lot of take on, like, the Miami-centric side, like, down there, just period, how their fans react to things. And to them, is kind of weird way, is almost, this one almost feels better to them than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because it feels like, maybe it's the beginning of a dynasty, as a feel, or basically it shuts everybody up forever as far as criticizers,
mm-hmm.
As far as legitimate criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we first point, you know, me, when the decision first happened, all of us, we were together, thinking they all died for the 4 years of this experiment. They have to win at least two.
Mm-hmm.
They win one or zero is a disappointment. If it's zero, it's an absolute failure. They should all retire. but if they win two, then, you know, they did good. They did, that gives them.
They done well.
They did enough. Now, next year, they have a shot for three.
We'll see. Is that fourth one?
Four finals.
Trips in a row?
But.
It's tough.
But for me.
Ask us about it.
But for me, seeing him against this team full of guys that, like, with Parker and Duncan, especially Duncan, knowing that me and you were talking about it, I said to you, I told you before the series started, I thought I had Miami in seven, and I said, I feel like it's going to be, they're going to come down, I think at some point halfway in the middle of the series, I said to you, before game five, I said to you, if the Heat win game five and it's 3-2 come back to Miami, you're going to get the Tim Duncan game.
We got it anyway.
We got it anyway.
It exists.
I was thinking, like, in the time of desperation, it's going to come to where Tim Duncan's going to go nuts. And you have to deal with it. That's going to be an L you took. And he gave you the Tim Duncan Mac Daddy game. In the first half, he came and gave you it. And they still dodged it. Like, that's still one. That's going to be, like, the thing that's going to be forgotten about that game.
Speaking of dodging, the way that they dodged that hook shot in Game 7, like, they switched a 6'8", 215-pound guy onto him, and Duncan goes Patrick Ewing.
This is the right hook that I've seen him make literally. Anybody that's watched basketball for the last 16 years has watched him make 100 times.
Like,
hundreds of times.
I was like, oh my god, he missed! Like literally losing my mind. Like, this is a lie that I just watched. Like, this isn't real. Like,
at this point, after watching that happen, and then LeBron comes,
you knew they were done.
Timeout, and he makes the jumper from the right elbow, and immediately sunk on me. And my personal reaction wasn't that I was so happy for LeBron getting second one and Wade getting his third and everything. Being that this is a team I've watched, so I watched this basketball team since LeBron got here more than any other NBA basketball team ever. Aside from maybe the 2000 Kobe Shaq Lakers. And the thing that hit me wasn't joy or being happy or whatever. It was just feeling so bad for Tim Duncan.
Yep.
That this guy, like, I'm the person that holds a grudge as a kid. Like, I always held grudges against, like, the guys that were wrestling heels at the time. Like, the bad guys. And it stuck with me, and that, you know, I come to begrudging respect, and I ultimately at the end, like, miss him at the end of career, and I still watch wrestling. Duncan is pretty much, like, for me, going up against the Shaq Kobe Lakers, he was the ultimate heel for me. And, you know,
and you being, like, a kind of, like, a Kevin Garnett kind of.
And also being a KG over Garnett guy, too, that's another thing to add fuel to it. That's another reason why. So then you.
And I felt a sort of a vindication, because I remember, like, upon first meeting all y'all, it was, like, me arguing against like six of y'all
because we hated Duncan.
Like, I was like, if y'all are basketball fans, how can y'all not understand this? Like,
you already heard all my arguments. My whole thing is, like, if you want to argue about, like, what have you, he always ended up having a better situation where he grew into it and learned. Like, that's no knock against him. Like, it is what it is. At this point in time, he was afforded more opportunities to be successful than Garnett was earlier on, and so there you have it. But you throw in, like, going back looking now over how great he's been for so long.
So, like, I see, I told y'all he was this great. Like,
it's not that he was this great. It was a thing of, I mean, instead of me, like, him having our respect through hate, like, it's more of an appreciation now.
Yeah.
And to see that, you know, this guy, you know, they probably should have been in the finals last year had not been for that crazy Ibaka and Perkins game. They would have been in the finals again.
Right.
2 years in a row, this has been their second finals after, you know, we've written them off. It's 5 years in a row.
Yep. First time I ever wrote them off was in 2008, so, yeah.
Yeah, so, it was just, to see him miss that shot, and that's the first thing, I've seen him make that shot a million times. It's just like seeing, you know, the players that you grew up watching, and all of a sudden they look exactly like how they always looked to you. I mean, it makes no sense to you why they look exactly the same as they always look when they were great, and then why aren't they great all the time like they always were?
Yeah.
Like, it was shocking to see him miss that over a 6'8 guy. Meanwhile, I've seen him make some of the most ridiculous falling down shots from the elbow, hook over.
Three-pointers.
Three-pointers and sending games in overtime. For him to miss that and then him miss the tip back.
It was heartbreaking.
And then, you know, watch him, you know, he buried his, you know, he covered his face with the jersey on the way back.
Then he slaps the floor, like.
All time out. He covers his face with a towel. He bundles up the towel. He wants to throw the towel in frustration, and he just stops, and then he just sitting there, covers his face in his hands.
And then
after what we saw in the post-game press conference in Game 6 where he looked defeated.
Yeah.
And then Game 7, watching him, you know, say that this is always going to haunt him. This is like one of the greatest winners in NBA history. Like,
he's going to die with this feeling.
To me, he's always been this guy that's
you never really know a lot about him.
People call him a power forward, and I always vehemently disagree with people about that because you look at the history of the NBA, power forwards don't win like Tim Duncan has won over his career. He's a goddamn winner. He's a center. Like, you look at him, he's one of the greatest players of all time, and half of them are centers. He's a center. That's one of the other reasons why I feel that way, that he's a center. To me, that's what washed over me visually more than LeBron winning again. Like, after that point, it just seemed kind of anticlimactic.
Yeah. I'll talk about the post game. You know, I saw Birdman with the Larry O'Brien trophy, and I almost wanted to turn the table over. Talk about some of the guys. Spoelstra didn't play. He didn't play Norris Cole the last two games.
Nope.
Birdman missed time in the series.
He got a DNP in what, two games?
Two games in a row.
And then he played in six and seven.
And I felt like Spoelstra was kind of, you know, throwing shit at the wall and seeing what stuck, basically.
Well, the thing was,
Mike Miller, you ain't hitting threes. We're yanking you. Like, come out the game.
Game seven, yeah. Stop making threes. They put in Battier after they had benched Battier in favor for Miller in the last round against Indiana because Battier is short circuited. And, you know, Haslam, they sat him down at the end. Haslam only getting in game seven because of the foul trouble from Bosch early. Bosch came through and didn't score a single point in a game seven.
Yeah.
Seven rebounds.
And
this is a weird game. Like, Chalmers was their third leading scorer, or fourth leading scorer. He goes 1-for-7 from three. He makes the crazy three from when the Spurs were up two after the Gary Neal shot. He comes down. He banks in a three that he did not mean to bank in.
I saw one. Gary Neal throughout this whole series make ridiculous and then just walk away, just like, yeah, you know, I do this, you know.
Meanwhile, like, the shot he missed, you know, terrible men missing him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like, that man, he'll take a jump shot all water, like, shooting from the volleyball lines, almost, like.
Like, the shot he hit over LeBron from, like, 30 feet away, like, hands on that guy, like, you understand, if you miss this shot, Popovich is not going to play the rest of the series, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You better make it.
but it was an epic series and all. You know, I hold the 2010 finals in great regard, seeing as how it was our, you know, last Laker championship until the next one. But it's an all-time great series we just saw.
Yeah.
And I felt like, you know, I told James this earlier, it didn't feel like a Game 7 to me. It felt like there was just going to be another game after it. Like, because it was like, what's the next chapter on this?
And like, I thought about that. I think the reason why I felt like that is because the guys were so exhausted in Game 7.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, they had to get their legs underneath them in the first quarter, and then by the fourth time the fourth quarter came around, they were so exhausted, and by the time that LeBron kept making those shots.
Because it didn't really feel like a war to me. Game 7 in 2010, that felt like a war.
But is that because those teams hated each other?
It could be.
Because, yeah, keep in mind, like, this is one of the weirdest finals I've ever seen. Like, out of all of, like, the big series that he'd have been in this run, that they've had three finals runs, this is the least, you know, stuff where the least amount of, like, anything happening. Like, Wade said at the end of the game.
That was funny.
I still don't know what the Kawhi Leonard's voice sounds like.
Yeah, he said, they don't even say nothing. They just kick your butt.
They just kick your butt, exactly. And, you know, both ways is, Pop is one of the few people to even give, in NBA circles, to even give Bradley any congratulations when he got all three of those guys.
Yeah.
And you just, like, it's two, you know, it's Riley and it's Popovich and R.C. Buford and, you know, seven Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
Seven Hall of Famers. You know, probably a future Hall of Fame coach who's already another Hall of Fame coach. Hall of Fame GM / coach upstairs. I mean, it can't get any more star-studded than that. Other than the location of where San Antonio happens to be, that's about it.
Rest in peace to the Spurs of boring shit.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, how do you have to? Imagine only a Tony Parker team be born. Like, if you're talking about, like, the pre-2003 team,
yeah,
when they were just dumping in the Robinson and dunking over and over and over, and they're finna hook you to death. You know, they're finna post, they're finna block
and Bruce Bowen corner three you.
I can understand that, but
rest in peace to that Spurs boring shit. Like, I felt like it's almost like in wrestling, like. Like, they put the Miami Heat over, but I felt like the Spurs were just the stars of the series. Like, sorry.
This was...
But...
Like, and losing, they finally get the respect they always do.
Yeah. It's just like wrestling.
It's a retrospect thing. Like, they're going to be looked at and appreciated more.
Than a win ever could do for them.
Yeah. Which is stupid.
makes no damn sense, but that's what it is. 42 minutes on our first segment. We're going to wrap it up here, and we're going to come back and talk about Kanye West and the Yeezus album. On that note, I am a god.
One Nation Radio!